live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse. This is Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Natto. Saturdays at the Spa is brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Good morning and welcome to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you here on a glorious Whitney morning. Different day and age. Anthony Mormino just left with me, and it's a beautiful day. The crowd would be here if they could. They can't. It is what it is. It's unfortunate, but that doesn't mean you can't come out in some way, shape, or form. We have a phenomenal card. Of course, the Whitney with Tom Stetot is going to, you know, the highlight of the day, but we've got the Alan Jerkins as well, and then, of course, Midnight Bizou earlier on the card in the personal ensign, and Jeff Bloom, co-owner of her, is going to join me in a second. But right off the rip, happy to welcome back Al Stahl, trainer of Tom's Detente, third year in a row on Saturdays at the Spa. So I guess if nothing else, I'm bugging your phone. It's a good thing.
Oh, no, absolutely, absolutely. When you get called to this tent over here in the corner, something's going your way.
And things are going your way. I mean, how many did you bring up here? You select stable, but the horses are running, huh?
Yeah, eight. Okay. And I've done a little bit of shuffling, but they're running well, and we might have picked the right bunch this year, okay. Which is it's a lot more difficult than it looks.
Yeah, and, well, you mentioned picking the right bunch. I mean, did you kind of go down the roster, what's in the stall, and who's coming up here, and who's staying? As I mentioned, it's not a lot of Kentucky guys came up. It's kind of a different year, you know. How has it worked out that who you got up here and dealing with the state of affairs, basically?
Right. Well, yeah, it's a little bit different. I personally wasn't going to skip out on Saratoga. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going to happen. So I assembled a crew and didn't take no for an answer.
Right.
And so we got the people up here that wanted to be here, and that's all worked out well. And as far as the horses go, I literally wait till the very last minute.
Okay.
Because you get the condition book out kind of late, and sometimes I've made a change almost when the vans pull up. You want to bring a sound horse up and one with a race to point four.
Right.
So it's very last minute, and we throw them all together and bring them up and see what happens.
We'll get right to it. We're going to show video of Tom's Detente winning the Alidar last year up here. And you talk about Saratoga. I can't imagine there's a horse in your barn that's more accustomed to Saratoga. He's 3-for-4 up here. He's won here in 2016-17. We see the Alidar here, so I would think he's taken nicely up here.
Yeah, no, he obviously likes Saratoga. Excuse me. He just does well up here. I can tell he's only been up here about, it's been almost 2 weeks, and he just, he does better. His eyes look better. His hair looks great. His weight is good. And with the new surface, I thought it might be good to get him up here and let him gallop over for about a week or so. And I was thrilled with his breeze. And I'm like everybody else. I'm thrilled with the new surface that Nair put in this year. It looks like it's going to be something very beneficial long term to the racing here.
I mean, as a handicapper, just watching races, it seems like it's been playing pretty fair as a whole.
Yeah, I'm just watching too. I mean, we've run more turf.
You've been
for whatever
on turf,
reason.
You're winners, yeah.
Yeah, but I've heard some people say it's a little speed and the kickback kind of bothers the horses. But I've seen some closers run well, so I haven't talked to any jocks about it. But just from what I have to deal with,
right. Soundness,
taking the rein, organizing the works and the gallops, I'm thrilled with it. They've done a great job, and they should be commended.
You mentioned how it seems Tom Stetot is doing better here. Everybody I talk to, it seems like the horses get here and they just take to it. They like it. What is it about upstate New York or the atmosphere that seems to have a lot of horses thriving?
Well, I think it's trees and grass and nice weather, combination of all that. And there's a lot to see up here, so it takes a certain type. I've brought horses up in the past that kind of get freaked out with all the things that happen here. It's a little quiet this year, but in general, as you well know, there's a lot of cars and peoples and tours and horses going all over everywhere. And most of them get used to it, but I've had a couple that didn't particularly like it. But it's just Saratoga. I think the humans are similar to the horses.
Yeah.
And we just get more comfortable here and enjoy ourselves, and we all do well.
If you can't like it up here, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah,
right?
You need to do something else. If you're a racing person and you don't like Saratoga, you really need to do something else.
7 years old now, so Tom's d'état, and the first thing that comes to mind, I mean, we don't see this a lot, first and foremost. So, you know, I mentioned in 2006 he broke his maiden up here. There's been a lot of starts and stops. Tom's d'état at 3 in 2016, and now, 3-5 in the Whitney. What's the progression been like from that young horse that took some time, certainly, to get to this point?
Right. Well, we stopped on him out of necessity. It's not like we said, oh, Tom, you know, we love you so much,
sure,
we're going to give you 6 months off.
Right.
We loved him, but we had to stop. And what we saw on a day-to-day basis, training, and he showed in the afternoon, we knew there was some brilliance there. We could just tell. You can tell those things. We got 50-horse stable.
Yeah.
You know, and the horse will stand out like a sore thumb, and the riders will come back with eyes like saucers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew he was worth persevering with, and the GMB, they were, whenever something would happen, it was minor.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll go to the clinic, and they'll say, well, we'll fix him, but don't plan on running him anymore. But every time you come back, and they say, okay, this went well, and that went well, and I don't see much here. And he's actually got pretty-looking legs. I mean, the joints look great. There's no heat or inflammation. He just had some traumatic type things happen, I guess, and as far as his progression from 3 till now, we always saw the brilliance when he got a chance to run, and I think what's made him what he is today is the fact that he's been really good for about 2 straight years,
right.
And he's got some continuity, he's got some rhythm, he's stringing races together, he's stringing works together, and I think it just made him the warrior that he is,
yeah.
And the talent has always been there, now it's all put together, And I think that one of the reasons he's here also is he had a great winter. We actually gave him a legitimate vacation.
Mm-hmm.
No surgeries, no paintings, no blistering, nothing. He just went to the fairgrounds, and we let him down and picked him up, and he didn't miss a day, didn't miss an oat, and he hasn't missed an oat all year. So I think that's why he's here today.
We're going to first big win. I mean, he won the Fayette, but then we'll show footage here of him winning the Clark, which, Al, it had to be great for you and the team and certainly – the Bensons, to, after all the hard work, the stops, the starts, to really answer the bell and, you know, get that grade one that I'm sure is the whole reason you kept bringing him back, because you saw this kind of talent.
Yeah, no, we thought he was a grade one type talent, and we contemplated the Breeders' Cup in California for maybe the mile, not necessarily the Classic, but that quickly we brushed that aside and went Fayette Clark, and he just did so well. I mean, the race that really put some hair on his chest, so to speak, was at Woodward.
Mm-hmm.
He won the Allidar very easily. In the Woodward, he had an awkward trip, and Irad, you know, rode a good race. He just was in a tough spot with the pace, and he ended up wide, and he fired really, really hard and got beat a length and changed to a great horse in Jimmy Jerkins' Preservationist.
Yep.
And after that race, he was just dialed in. I mean, the Fayette and the Clark were basically foregone conclusions,
right,
if he was going to stay together. So that's what you know made us go that direction, and we got the grade one, and we just couldn't be more excited to be exactly where we are. We wanted this to be the third race off his comeback,
right.
And while we had to zig and zag because of COVID, he ended up getting a prep at Oaklawn and the Foster, which was blew everybody's mind, and
yeah,
here we are in the third race in our cycle. I think it's three races in 248 days,
right,
which is perfect freshening, and so he's ready to go.
We'll show the Foster now, and you know the Clark was a big run, and then he got the job done at Oaklawn. 7 years old, 18th start. I mean, this was another level. Is that fair to say?
And we didn't expect it really. We thought,
right,
he'd win. We thought he'd run his race.
And not to cut you off, just while they're watching at home, he's a lot closer here as well in this trip.
Right. Well, he's an athletic horse. He's big like he is. He leaves the gate on his toes. So that's a good thing. Hope he does that this afternoon. And he, Miguel knew that they weren't going too fast, and we thought maybe the couple Calhoun horses, one might push a little harder, and we found ourselves in an absolute dream spot going 48 and change for a half, and it was kind of over early.
By my standards, is kind of chasing you on the outside. He's back for more today. Obviously, the long shot, Mr. Buff, is going to the front. Joel knows this, your horse, back aboard today, Joel Rosario. who nobody's riding better here, that's for sure. Do you have a plan in mind, or Joe? That's for Joel.
Yeah, that's Joel. Mm-hmm. Joel, I haven't even talked to Joel, but my guess would be when he saw the 5 out of 5, he had to just lick his chops and say, I like that. I'm sure it'll help him away from the gate. And my guess would be that, by my standards, is going to have a little different strategy than he did in the Foster. Coming out the one hole with Jose, I expect that horse to go a little bit. And just so, I mean, Joel, like I said, he's an instinctive rider. He'll make the call on the fly off the break, and that's of all the things to worry about with horses and how they're eating and how they're moving and all that. Yeah. Joel Rosario in this particular spot is not even anything, not even hadn't crossed my mind.
And just to folks watching this race again, as a point of reference, you know, a lot of people wanted to see Midnight Bijou in the Whitney, and you know, that let's run her against Tom's Détat. Tom ran 9 lengths faster, going the exact same distance about 32 minutes later. I won't put you on the spot because Midnight Beach is a great horse, but this was just, this was the race of the year for my money. I mean, that was the definitive performance in the division.
Well, it caught us off guard. We were trying to just creep up the ladder a little bit, and he had run, I think he had 136 days between the Clark and the Oaklawn Mile, and then he had another 77 days, which is what, 213 days. Yep. Second race in 213 days. You don't expect to get 0.02 off of a 21-year-old track record. So we were just blown away, and he did it easily, and he's come out of it well. I mean, theoretically, he's supposed to maybe react somewhat.
Is there a worry there?
Well, worry because you just hear about it, but he's a big, strong, solid class horse. And, I mean, if he reacts, maybe it's still good enough. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it just... It was a little bit more than we expected, but who'd expected that?
Right, right. Obviously, the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland is the end-all, be-all, I would think. And I know you don't want to get too far ahead of yourselves, but in the perfect world, do you have a progression? You're working backwards from there?
Not really, because like Keeneland stakes schedule hasn't come out.
Right.
I know the things are shuffled around a little bit, and I know the Lucas Classic has been on hiatus. It's off. You know, we'll just run today, and he could come back to New York, not the Woodward, but maybe the Jockey Club. He could do that like Blaine did. He could possibly try wherever the Fayette might end up at Keeneland. Or who knows? He runs unbelievably well fresh. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have all the confidence in the world. I know that'd be, you know, what, about 95 days or something like that. So,
yeah.
You know, who's to say? But, I mean, anything's on the table, but
right.
We're just completely focusing on today.
You mentioned Blaine, so Bri, if we could, let's pull up that Whitney in 2010. Al knows the winner's circle for the Whitney. In a lot like Tom's Détat, maybe in the Foster, or certainly the Clark, I mean, you're seeing Blaine's 3-1 here. I mean, this was kind of his coming out party. Was that safe to say after, you know, he hadn't yet reached the heights he was going to hit?
Right, right. Well, he ran extremely well winning the grade one in the Foster. It was a grade one back then, and he beat a nice Todd Pletcher horse who made an easy lead with a slow pace and ran him down from, I think, the 11 or 12 hole.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his second race off the bench. And it really, really tightened him up well. So I'm hoping we have the same type of effort here. But, yeah, this is exciting. Look at the old school graphics, huh? Don't you like that? Look at that.
And this is a loose quality road that you're running down.
Yeah, right. I mean, a lot of people said he went too slow on the front end. And that concept doesn't even register with me. I mean, quality road on the front end going a half mile and 48 and change.
Yeah, you take your chances.
I would take that 101 times out of 100.
You are set up for a big day here. You've got, I picked you earlier on the card in the turf race, and then in the nightcap at 7:20, they're going to keep you around, hopefully after a little champagne with a Whitney win. They're going to keep you around for the caress. We've got footage of the license fee with Dalika, who came up a little short trying to run down I'll Handle the Cash. Both of them back today, cutting back a half. Yeah, if you can see it. Describe what we're seeing here, Al.
Exactly. Exactly. I had
shorting
no,
up a half furlong today.
I had no idea. I know she was last right here, and Joel wants to go around him, but a horse backs right there, and so he says, okay, well, I got to stay in there. And, you know, she's just not freewheeling it right there. There's a little pinch there, and she has to split horses, and he gets a run a little later. I'm sure he wanted to. And Ron Anderson said, his agent, if they'd run this race 100 times, she would have won it 99 times.
Right.
And I'm not exactly sure he might not be right. But that's okay. I mean, that's racing, and she fired, yeah. And it's going to be the same way today.
Right.
The trip horse wins it, whether it's us, hopefully it's us, but I think that's what it's going to be like again today.
And Joel, for my money, rides turf sprints better than anyone. He's such a powerful finisher. I would think he fits this.
Yeah, and this filly's finishing really sharply around one turn.
Yeah.
She ran some nice two-turn races, but she's a little rank, and she doesn't quite listen to the rider. When they are going 48, and she kind of gets her head up and pulls too hard. So we backed her up to where if they go 22 and change, and she's not going to be pulling and rushing
right.
on the lead. So he just sits on, and he'll gather her up, and she should fire a good shot today. And if she gets the right path, she's got a tremendous chance.
Quickly, before I let you go, you mentioned there's eight up here. You won with a firster on the turf. Any names that we might want to look up? I mean, you've had classy two-year-olds in the past.
Yeah. I brought a pair of colts up here. A nice colt for Claiborne Farm and Mrs. Dill Snyder. He's half brother to Lee by Spitestown. His name is Foliage. He's a sharp horse, most probably. I like to run my 2-year-olds one time up here. Just get him up here, get him acclimated. And he's kind of a forward type of horse. Mm-hmm. We like him. And I've got a big, long, leggy colt by Mucho Macho Man who's, I've never had a 2-year-old that we bought at a 2-year-old training sale grow so much after a sale.
Mm-hmm.
We bought him in March. Keith Dickey bought him for me. I was going down there, but all heck broke loose at that time, especially in New Orleans. So I scrapped my trip, and he did the dirty work for me, the leg work, and bought us a really, really nice colt who is going to run maybe 6.5 here on the 15th.
Okay.
He'll work tomorrow, and so his name is Mystical Man. So I've got two nice colts, and that's all we brought in the 2-year-old part.
How does that work? Because typically the 2-year-olds in training, they're very forward. They're pretty much ready to run, and then a horse blows up and grows on you. What, do you have to take a step back a little
bit? Well, we take a step back automatically after the sale. We send him to Skylight Training Center, home of Art Collector.
Okay.
So Tommy Drury keeps a – when he's not looking at Art Collector, he's keeping –
he's got better things to do.
He's
right
keeping an eye on our horses, hopefully. So – and I saw him, I was up in Louisville in early March, and he was kind of a weedy type of horse, and then we went back down the fairgrounds, and next time I saw him, about 6 weeks later, I mean, it was dramatic, the change in the colt. And he's filled out to be a nice, really nice-looking horse who will look better in another 60 days.
Right.
So we're kind of looking forward to him, and I'm actually going to work those two colts tomorrow together, so we're excited.
And you're a patient guy, and you mentioned, you know, like to get a start up here, and obviously up here, that's one turn on the dirt, but the Churchill races are at two turns, so again, we're all the progression kind
of. Yeah, I've done here and either run at Churchill towards the end or just Keeneland. You know,
right.
It just all depends how things shake out. So if you like action, you want to be in Kentucky from September 1st on.
It's a good spot to be.
From September 1st to December 1st, it's on.
Right. And hopefully in early November, Tom's Day Tot will have you there front and center at Keeneland.
That's the ultimate goal.
Al Stahl, appreciate it. Third year in a row on Saturdays at the spot. So this year especially, thank you for taking the time to sit in that chair. It means a lot.
Yeah,
Best of luck.
My pleasure. I've always come here. I'm very happy to run into Anthony on the way out. We go back a long way. And
I never hear that from people.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see, maybe I like him on TV better.
We love Anthony.
He's our boy.
We love Anthony. He's been here forever. And you said, what, about 25 years you've known him?
Yeah. Well, I came in 96 for my first year, and he just said 98.
Okay,
so
there you go.
When you meet Anthony once, you know who he is.
You will know who he is.
Whether it's his clothes or just him, you know. He's a good man.
Absolutely. Al Stahl, Tom's Day Tot in the Whitney. It'll bring us to our first break here on Saturdays at the Spot. When we come back, Jeff Bloom, co-owner of Midnight Beasts. Stay tuned.
They're off in the personal ensign, and Coach Rocks comes out on the lead. Elite is up close to, between those two, it's She's a Julie. These three will take them into the first turn with Wildcat right behind them in a wide run for Golden Award. Midnight Bizou will settle at the rear of the field early on, biding her time in the early stages here, some 6.5 lengths off of front-running Coach Rocks, who's setting the pace under Luis Saez. On to the backstretch, Coach Rocks runs a quarter in 23.46 seconds. A solid first fraction here. She's a Julie is running along in second onto the backstretch. Elate is third. Golden Award fourth between horses. Then Wildcat on the inside. And Mike Smith and Midnight Bizou at the rear of the field here, racing 5 lengths off the lead as they continue their run up the backstretch. Coach Rocks out there isolated on a 2-length advantage on She's a Julie. Elate and Jose Ortiz sit third on the backstretch here. They're 2.5 lengths off the lead. Wildcat, who's fourth on the inside. Midnight Bizou is just alongside of Golden Award at the back of the pack. 47.88 was the half. They're inside the half-mile pole. Coach Rocks continues to lead the way by a length and a half. She's a Julian Elite, heads apart second and third. And then it's Wildcat. Midnight Bizou is fifth. She's moving now. And Elite is two as they make their way to the top of the stretch. And now Elite makes her move for the lead. And Midnight Bizou comes blasting on the outside after her. These two will turn for home together. Coach Rocks has faded to third. She's a Julian Wildcat on the inside. They're into the stretch. And it's Elite to catch. Midnight Bizou, her fearsome foe, comes at her on the outside. And these two lay it on the line with a 16th to go. Elite on the inside, Midnight Bizou on the outside. They're coming to the wire. Who's it going to be? Oh, it's so close. It's so close. Was it Midnight Bizou?
No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Bob Rock. These two arch rivals head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Good morning and welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you on Whitney Day here at Saratoga, and a different feel to it, obviously, without crowds, but just an action-packed, superstar-graded stakes lineup today. And super happy to have Al Stahl again on. He's been great. He's third year in a row with Tom's Day Tot now, who's clearly the horse to beat in the Whitney, and the arguably the best handicapped horse we have in the country. And I'm happy to be joined now by Jeff Bloom, co-owner of Midnight Bizou, who's certainly the clubhouse leader of the distaff division. And we'll welcome in Jeff via the phone. Is on the down low in Saratoga. Jeff, welcome to Saturdays at the Spa. Whitney Day, and certainly Midnight Bizou front and center in the personal ensign as well.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Going into the break, we showed video footage of the personal ensign last year, and Midnight Bizou had come in winning multiple grade ones. But Jeff, before we get going on 2020, just looking back at that race last year and what was, it's going to go down in the annals of Saratoga history. I mean, the fact that her in Elite, just an absolute throw-it-down war. What was going through your mind off the far turn in the personal ensign last year?
You don't want to know. But, look, we knew we were coming in against a formidable foe. Arguably on a late home court, I certainly wasn't concerned about the added distance. But it was at a distance that, on paper, certainly favored Elite. To talk about just an epic stretch duel between those two, looking back as a race fan, you have such a fond appreciation for those kinds of races. And to be able to battle it out down the entire length of the stretch to superstar mares and end up being on the winning side was just as rewarding an experience as you can imagine. But I can tell you that stretch duel felt like it lasted an eternity for me. It was it was one of those things where, you know, you felt you had a shot, and then they were just going toe-to-toe, and there was just a huge amount of relief when they posted up our number as the winner.
Yeah, it was tough to tell live, and it's, you know, you hear the old adage, you know, doesn't deserve a loser, and that was certainly the case there. I guess, Jeff, we'll start from the beginning. You know, Midnight Bijou, an $80,000 daughter of Midnight Lou, 21-1 when running second in her debut. You bought her. What stood out, or what did, and certainly what did you think when you bought her? I mean, we have reached epic heights here, but back in the day when it all started out in California, what were your impressions early on of Midnight Bijou?
Well, look, you know, you always hope that when you make a decision to buy a horse that you're making the right decision and you're going to have a multiple graded stake winner on your hands. But being a realist, we all know how tough this game is. When I purchased Midnight back when she was a two-year-old, there were a number of qualities that stood out for me. You know, I get asked the question all the time, well, you know, what was it about her? And, you know, some of it's hard data, science, and a lot of it's, you know, the intangibles that are hard to communicate or explain. But the filly had such an amazing presence and presence, you know, of mind in terms of, you know, just her eye, her look, the way she handled herself, and also her fluidity of motion and the way she handled herself before, during, and after she had to showcase. So it was a combination of a lot of things. And so at the end of the day, we got very lucky. And, you know, when I look back, the funny thing is going into the ring when it was time to start bidding, I really wasn't certain we were going to be able to afford her. You know, the sale was strong and I just, you know, I thought there would be more attention on her than there was. And when the hammer dropped at 80, I was as relieved as you can ever imagine.
Did you have a number in mind, Jeff? Like, you know, thinking, easier said than done, but did you say kind of to yourself, well, the filly's going to go for this, and then, you know, that would be above what we wanted to pay?
That's a great question, because I always assign a value to a horse before I go into the auction ring. And with Midnight, I really don't know. I know I would have gone above and beyond what my limit would have been going into the ring. And I ask myself all the time about this, like, what would I have stopped at?
Right.
And it probably would have ended up being at something like 150.
Okay.
You know, I cringe when I think about it. Might have come to something like that. But at the end of the day, she went for well below. You know, I really thought she was going to be in like the 110, 120 price range. And I would have gone above that. I just don't know how far I would have.
Right. Well, luckily it didn't come to that. You mentioned that the sales ring and before we get to 2020, you know, Midnight Bijou was supposed to make another appearance in a sales ring. You had her entered at Keeneland November in the face of facing Tipton Sale. Ultimately decided to withdraw her. It seems like a pretty darn good move now, Jeff, but looking back on it, and first and foremost, I think it's a great sportsmanship gesture, money aside, just to see, you know, I had Al Stahl on before we got you, and, you know, Tom's d'etat, 7 years old, and now Midnight Bijou, 5 years old. It's not something you see too often, so I think, you know, you should be commended for that. But she was supposed to go through the ring. What kind of, you know, I'm sure you huddled with the team and Steve, and he probably said, you know, she's doing as good as she ever has been. What was the thinking about not going through with it?
Yeah, you know, at the time, I'm sure pretty much everybody said, you must be, you know, a crazy idiot for making that kind of decision. We were laboring over the notion of not being able to have this experience continue past November. And throughout the year, as things continued to progress, we just sort of put it out of our mind. And, you know, I had hinted around quite a bit about, well, you know, maybe we don't have to do this. And just as a fan of horses like this, there's such an appreciation to be able to go out there and, you know, perform on the stage like they do. And we were enjoying it so much. And, you know, the most important thing was the health, fitness, and condition of Midnight. And coming into the Breeders' Cup, she couldn't have been doing any better, and she just loves her job. And it was right before, you know, we were getting ready to, you know, go ahead and run, that we just said, look.
You had to make that decision before the race, is that correct?
Yeah. The Breeders' Cup race. And we wanted to make the decision prior to the Breeders' Cup, to her actual race, because in no way, shape, or form was the decision predicated on her performance in that race. And so we were relieved when we came to that decision. And of course, I talked it over with Steve, making sure that, you know, physically this was something that made sense. And you're right. Fortunately, we got rewarded for that. And hopefully racing benefits from it. And I know this much, and it's really gratifying to see the number of fans that reach out to us about our mare. The fact that she's ours, it's just so special and rewarding. And looking back, I can't even imagine that we even considered selling her at the time.
So she ran second in the distaff, and then, you know, you're confirmed for a five-year-old campaign, and you really went after a big one in Saudi Arabia, $20 million for the Saudi Cup. We're going to bring up footage of that in a second, and I would think, Jeff, once the decision was as a five-year-old, and here we see it now, and she's basically last entering when the real running kind of begins. Jeff, this was a monster run to basically be chasing, you know, maximum security, turning for home in a $20 million race.
Yeah, and at that part of the race, one might have thought, geez, this wasn't the greatest decision in the world that we made. But I will say, she traveled over there in such great shape. I mean, she's just shown that she adapts to any situation so well. Nothing fazes her. So we knew that we had her right. And if things went right, you know, we'd have a shot to run big in a race like this. And, you know, I always pay attention to Mike Smith when he's on her back and kind of just watch the subtle things that he's doing on her. And you could tell that Mike, you know, was in a spot where he had a lot of horse, and it was just a matter of when am I going to go and where am I going to go with her. And when she started to roll, there was a point when she hit just a few jumps after ending in the stretch, and I thought, now these are some really good horses that are in front of her, but I think she can run them down. And I'll tell you, when we got within just 10 jumps from the wire, there was a moment where, and I'm even getting goosebumps now, I thought to myself, we're going to take down the world's most lucrative horse race against the world's best horses with Midnight Vizu. And, you know, at the end of the day, we were just a jump short. But to finish second in that important race against those good horses was such a great validation for the level of talent that this filly has.
And she comes back in the Fleur-de-Lis. We'll bring video of that up. On the same card that Tom's d'Etat won the Foster. And Jeff, I mean, you've owned a lot of horses in your time. I can't possibly imagine you've ever won a bigger race so easily. This was just a dominant effort with literally no, I mean, she's just cantering, basically.
Yeah, you know, and that to me stands out as one of my all-time favorite races. On her resume, just for so many different reasons, because you're right, you know, when you're running against graded state company, those races are tough. And it was a lot to ask of Midnight off the layoff, coming from the other side of the world, and to respond that way so easily. When Mike kind of got her going and she made that middle move, which really, watching it, seems so early. And then to continue to go and sustain that drive and draw away the way she did just instilled so much confidence in our continued understanding of her ability, and the fact that this is a filly that seems to actually be getting better. And one of the first things Mike said to me following the race was, that's the best this filly's ever felt, which, imagine knowing what she's already done previous to that, to come into this campaign knowing that the filly's doing that much better was so exciting, and you know, makes us feel a whole lot better coming into the race today.
You mentioned Mike Smith a few times, and because of the world we're living in right now, Mike won't be here today. Ricardo Santana, who's, you know, ridden countless winners for Steve Asmussen, takes over. Is it I don't want to say a worry, Jeff. Do you have 1% of concern? I know she's a veteran, and Ricardo's won a lot of big races. He won a grade one up here last week. Is she a horse that it takes any getting used to, or is this kind of business as usual?
It's always, it's a variable added into the mix. You know, something's changing, but she's not a difficult horse to ride. And what makes things a little bit easier is the fact that Ricardo knows the filly. He's been on her back in the morning for numerous workouts. So he's gotten a chance to get a feel for how she carries herself, how she responds, what her mouth feels like. And, you know, even Ricardo, going into some of these races, has discussed things with Mike, telling him about her training.
Right.
So it's a shame that due to the COVID restrictions, Mike was unable to travel here, but we certainly feel confident in Ricardo's abilities and the fact that he already knows the filly and has such a strong relationship and rapport with Steve.
Jeff, before I let you go, I'll put you on the spot a little bit. A lot of people, off that fleur-de-lis were clamoring, is she going to run in the Whitney? What's going to happen? Well, she's in the personal ensign as a heavy favorite. Going forward, you've run in the money twice in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Do you have a plan in mind, Jeff? Or is obviously, how the filly's doing and all that, but in the perfect world, do you have a plan to which race you want to run in at Keeneland if all things are being equal?
Well, look, the plan is, as you said, focused and getting to the Breeders' Cup in November. But I would not be afraid to run against the boys in any way, shape, or form. But to answer specifically, the goal is the Breeders' Cup. And, mm-hmm. and we'll let the filly dictate, to us what seems to be the right race at the Breeders' Cup, whether it's the Distaff or the Classic. Fortunately, we know she can handle that kind of competition. She's run against the boys, and I've always maintained that there are no distance limitations with Midnight Bizou, and she's obviously answered that question time and time again. So I'd be lying to you if I said I wasn't intrigued and excited about the notion of maybe going in the Classic and running against the boys, but we'll do what's right by the filly, and we'll see how things play out. So it's a race by race situation right now. We're focused on the personal ensign, and we'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Midnight Bizou, a heavy favorite in today's to defend her title in the personal ensign. Jeff, last one before we let you go, and it's great to be talking about grade one races and champions and things like that, but apparently if I'm looking to see some 70s or 80s rocking out in California, I need to have you on speed dial. Is that correct?
Back in the day, that might have been the case. Yeah, we had a blast, for a number of years there at Del Mar, kicking off the season with our parties at the historic Belly Up. And I know some of your friends have been fortunate enough to come out at the right time and enjoy those parties.
But, well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on...
I'm sorry?
Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on which way you look at it.
Exactly.
Kidding aside, Jeff Bloom, co-owner of Midnight Bizou. Jeff, thanks a ton for taking the time today on a busy Grade 1 Saturday in Saratoga. Best of luck today in the personal ensign and certainly going forward as well.
Well, appreciate it so much. Thanks for having me, and great talking to you.
All right, Jeff Bloom, co-owner of Midnight Bizou, a heavy, heavy favorite to defend her title in the personal ensign and really kind of kickstart what could be a huge second half of the year for her and really for racing, because as you heard Jeff allude to, he wouldn't be scared about taking on the boys, and if that's in the Breeders' Cup Classic or what have you, racing always likes to play up those kind of male versus female things, and Midnight Bizou, as Jeff said, and certainly her form and her fleur-de-lis indicated seemingly better than ever, and it's great that as racing fans, I know we can't be over there watching today, but Midnight Bizou in the personal ensign, and then a little bit later, Temps d'Etat in the Whitney. So just the stars, as always, are here at Saratoga. So what that's going to do is bring us to our next break here on Saturdays at the Spa. When we come back, Joe Christofek of Churchill Downs will be talking Kentucky Shippers, some horses today on the card, and just kind of going over, we see a lot of horses from different circuits coming in. As a handicapper, how do you kind of approach them in their new surroundings? So stay tuned. Joe Christofek, when we come back.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play. In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of ranch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you on just a beautiful Whitney day. I can't go to the track, but it doesn't mean you can't get out here, get up to Saratoga. All the branches are open as well. Capital OTB Bet. You can fire up the phone and bet and all that good stuff. Our buddy Seth Marrow is going to be over at the Embassy Suites today with a bankroll. Stuart and the gang do a great job over there. So check it out. I'll be over there with some friends and throwing popcorn and heckling Seth a little bit. So Al Stahl started us off with Tom's D'Etat in the Whitney, and then followed up by Jeff Bloom, co-owner of Midnight Bijou, in the Personal Ensign. And it's a pretty decent segue to bring in one of my good friends and Churchill Downs analysis, Joe Christofek. And Joe, welcome. Thank you, first and foremost, for making the time on a Saturday. And looking pretty good. I know you had some reservations about that. but you, of all people, would know... Tom's D'Etat, Midnight Bijou, pretty front and center, and you can. I guess we can start about talking about two of the bigger stars that you saw this year at Churchill.
Yeah, I mean, they both raced on the same day, and both horses absolutely put on a show. Tom's D'Etat did run significantly faster than Midnight Bijou, but neither one of the horses really had to try all that hard. So I thought they were both ultra impressive, and I expect huge performances from both of them again today.
Well, we showed it earlier, but we'll bring up the footage of Tom's D'Etat winning the Foster. And I asked Al Stahl, he was on to start the show right here with me. As good as Tom's D'Etat is and has been, I said to Al, and I would think you would agree, Joe, this just brought it to a different level.
I think what brought it to a different level even before this was the Clark last November. I can't remember a dirt horse as a six-year-old improving going into their seven-year-old year. I mean, I don't think this horse gets the respect he deserves. I mean, if you remember last year in the Breeders' Cup Classic, he was like an afterthought, right? He had a good year last year. But when he won the Clark, man, it was unbelievable. He won that race under wraps. He had no business winning the Oaklawn Mile, short stretch mile, sloppy racetrack. Got left at the start, was completely up against it. He wins that. And then he wins the Stephen Foster, similarly to the way he won the Clark. Got a great trip, but ran significantly faster than Midnight Bijou and didn't even try in doing it. The race sets up perfect for him today. He's run well at Saratoga before. He's trained at this racetrack. He's got an outside post with some speed in front of him, and he's tactical. I'm looking very forward to today. I know there's other horses that people think are bettable in there, but to me, he's an absolute single.
I'm with you 100%. I think in a race like this with a short field, I don't think it does anyone any good to, you know, let's just for easy purposes, you make a $50 exact at Tom's d'Etat over two horses. I don't think that's good betting advice or strategy. To me, it's a one punch to the hoop with By My Standards in second. He ran well in the Foster. Al, like I said, was with me. He thought maybe he'll get a little more of an aggressive ride today under Jose Ortiz. I thought he was fine in the Foster. He came up against a better horse that day, but I do like him second best in here.
It's strange because during the pandemic, as you know, we didn't have any fans of Churchill, but I was walking out to do the interview and Al was watching the Foster with his family by one of the TVs, so I actually watched it with him. We were both shocked that he got that perfect pressing trip through those slow fractions, and By My Standards, his connections were not happy with the ride. He's going to be more aggressive. He's got the rail. By My Standards ran the best race of his career, and it was still four lengths short to Tom d'Etat, who won for fun. So I think that kind of sort of tells you a lot.
Yeah, that's a little frightening when you've got to come back up against the same one that just kind of whacked you around a little bit. Before we get into actual horses today, Joe, on the card, talk a little bit about, you know, you are front and center at Churchill Downs, Kentucky Racing, but you obviously handicap a lot, so you have to do it with all sorts of horses. What about horses coming to your circuit from a different one? As handicappers here, we're still pretty early on in the Saratoga meet. Any words of wisdom for the people at home that are kind of looking at these horses maybe for the first time, and how do they evaluate them, especially from Churchill, but even as a whole, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I follow Kentucky Racing almost exclusively. So it's Churchill, Keeneland, and then Ellis Park and Kentucky Downs, Turfway to a certain extent, although I'm at Fairgrounds during those months following those races. So the more knowledge you have and the more intimate knowledge you have about the horses you're looking at, the better chance you have in these multi-race sequences, which horses to use, which horses to throw out. So for me, when I'm looking at Kentucky horses going to Saratoga, horses that maybe are pointing to the Saratoga meet, horses that have run well there in the past, horses that are training over that racetrack at Saratoga after running in Kentucky, either Churchill Downs, Keeneland, or both. I think those are big advantages. And then my advantage following the Kentucky races, track biases and track trips, trip notes for every race. I take them, religiously, knowing strength of field, knowing how the race is played out, knowing how those horses compare to some of the horses that are based in New York and racing this summer at Saratoga. I think the more knowledge you have about all the horses in the race and the sequence that's in front of you, the better chance that you have to put a winning ticket.
The first one we're going to talk about, we're going to bring up footage of King Cause earlier in the year in May at Churchill, kind of coming from the back to run second. This is a race two here at Saratoga. I kind of thought a race that was there for the taking, Joe, and I almost picked King Cause. I ultimately picked him in second. Did he have a little trip this day? I know the third place finisher came back to win. He looks very competitive first time Tom Amos here today.
Yeah, I mean, look at those races at Tampa where he won two in a row and he had that big figure on March 6th. Took some time off, transferred barns, and then he ran a huge race behind Ramsey Solution, who went gate to wire through slow fractions on May 25th, and he had trouble two or three times during the race. Steadied, shuffled on the turn, rallied off heels, in tight in the stretch, and still sustained that bid to the wire. Pace compromised as well. Tom likes to win races at Saratoga. He knows which horses to bring there. I think he's got a couple of live horses on the card today. And a 10-1 in the morning line in this race against this competition, I like his chances to run a huge race.
Yeah, I think he fits very nicely. He certainly fits on paper. Maybe, as you mentioned, Ramsey Solution's a very, very nice horse. And I said Hierarchy came back to win as well. So I think he fits in a short field that could lead to kind of a bunched finish a little later on in the card. And we're going to, a little bit, in a few minutes, we'll talk about your pick five that you put together. But race six kicks off the pick five. And Cool Bobby comes in from Churchill off just a laugher in the slop. This is a good one to look at for many, many different reasons, Joe. We're going to bring it up. I mean, he absolutely aired in the slop. It's going to be fast today. How does Cool Bobby, I mean, he's run well on a fast main track before. This was a huge effort. Track aided, Joe? What do you think?
Well, like we talked about earlier, if you're looking at a Midnight Beast or a Tom's D'Etat and you're playing multi-race sequences and you like those horses, depending on how many tickets you're putting together, you got to single them. You can't go two or three deep in those races and extend how much you're going to spend in these sequences and then get the 2-5, 3-5, 4-5 favorite to win. In this race, I think Everfast is the horse to beat. He did run very well over the short stretch mile of Oaklawn and again in the Blame Stakes. And then the Maker's Mark mile, I think, is a toss-out. So sure, he's the horse to beat. I think he fits well at 7 furlongs. But in this kind of race, I like to try to lock it up, meaning using Everfast and, in this case, using Cool Bobby, who did win by 10 lengths. The favorite that day did not show up at all. The Rock says he was the odds-on favorite, did not run well that particular day. But if you look back at Cool Bobby's races at Santa Anita and Del Mar, he ran some very fast races. You know he's capable. He won that last race for fun. He was eased under the finish line for Cherie DeVoe. And I think as the likely third choice in the race, 5-1 in the morning line, I think is more than fair. This is a horse that I would certainly use in multi-race sequences along with Everfast, but this is a horse I might bet based on the potential value.
All right, so Joe's got 3-7. We'll put his ticket up here in a second. That middle pick five. Don't forget, it's not the late pick five. It's the middle pick five. Joe put together a $63 ticket. Here we go. Thank you, Bri, for 50 cents. Just looking at your ticket, the obvious one I want to talk about, because I agree with you that Tom's D'Etat is a single and you're spreading a little bit in race six, and race seven and race eight. So let's jump to the grade one Jerkins. It's the last race of this particular sequence. You've got a deep spread in there, Joe, 7 of them. I see it the same way in that I want coverage in there. I mean, you've got a 50-1 down inside Hopeful Treasure as part of your brigade. Talk about the Jerkins, and you know, it's safe to say you agree with me in that it's a lot more wide open than just No Parole, straight wire job again.
Yeah, I use No Parole on the ticket defensively because if I get there and No Parole wins, you know, at least with a $63 investment, it's not going to kill me to make a couple hundred bucks on the pick five. But yeah, I mean, I went with Shoplifted. I went with 3 Technique. Tappa to Win's going to be a lot of tickets. On a lot of tickets, I used him. Mischievous Alex can improve second off the layoff. Echo Town can certainly turn the tables. And then you mentioned the 50-1 Hopeful Treasure. He ran some pretty fast races as a 2-year-old and early in his 3-year-old season. The Gold Fever, I'm not going to count against him. 50-1 in the morning line seems a little bit high to me. And I just think this race might have the recipe for chaos. So of the long, 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 long shots, that's the one I decided to include. But I could see No Parole winning. Obviously, he had things in his favor in the Woody Stevens. And that might not be the case today. And he's never run over this racetrack. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, I said to Anthony Mormino on the handicappers report, if they let No Parole walk again on the front end, there's got to be an investigation or something, because there's a lot of speed in here. And after what he just did in the Woody Stevens, they are supposed to go after him. And it's nothing should be free today in the Jerkins.
Yeah, I've seen this horse since the beginning of his career at Fairgrounds. He's Louisiana bred. Tom Amos was always high on him. Obviously, as a talented 3-year-old, you got to try to find out if you can stretch out. He found out pretty quickly that this is a one-turn horse. 7 furlongs is probably his limit. He's super talented, and he's got the best speed in the field. But there are a lot of horses that should be able to take early, middle, and late shots at him. As the favorite, I got to try to find a price in here.
Joe, it's August 1st, and normally you would probably be a lot more relaxed, but this year and this we've got Kentucky Derby to talk about. So before I let you go, it's coming up fast. What do we got? 4 weeks, 5 weeks from today, the Derby in September. What are you looking at right now, 5 weeks away? You know, I know we can talk about Tiz-a-Law, we can talk about Honor AP, but who out there, maybe is anybody off your radar? You're front and center about all this. I know you like Art Collector, correct?
Yeah, I've liked Art Collector for quite a while. I've had Tiz-a-Law number one on my list. since the beginning, even after, you know, he didn't win at Churchill last fall. Obviously had a major excuse, and he's done absolutely nothing wrong since. And I think he's the undisputed number one right now. We'll see what Honor AP obviously does against the short field this weekend. I like to root for the little guy, man. I know Tommy Drury, he's a great horseman. He's a great dude. He has done a great job with Art Collector. And it's nice to see the little guy with a nice horse. Obviously, you know, we run a stable of horses, Brilliant Race, and we've got three very capable trainers that we use. And, you know, it's nice to see the little guy, so to speak. I mean, Tommy's been a great trainer for a long time, 20-25%, but nobody knows his name because he's been training on the smaller circuits. Art Collector has done nothing wrong. He's got tactical speed. We know he likes Churchill Downs. Tommy's going to run him in the Ellis Park Derby thinking he needs to run, which leads me to believe that he's kicking down the stall, sure, which isn't necessarily a bad sign. And I think he can get the mile and a quarter distance the first Saturday in September. So that's who I'm rooting for with my heart. Tis the law, the one to beat with my head right now.
Let me ask you a question, Joe. I've had some good discussions with friends about the Derby this year. From your opinion, is it going to be easier or harder to win? Because we're seeing, you know, a horse like Art Collector isn't even running in the Derby in May. You know, we have Tis the Law, we had Honor AP, but those late developers, are they going to, I would think they're going to add, now Art Collector is certainly up here now, but some of those horses are going to add to the belly of this race that might not have been, certainly might not have been in the race, but especially not as developed as they would have been on the first Saturday in May. So your estimation, Joe, easier or harder to win a Derby on September 5th?
You know, it's more like the Travers than it is the Kentucky Derby, mm-hmm, right? You get those late developing horses.
For sure.
I would say it's probably a little bit easier, though, because we've had so many good ones, yeah, off the path. We've had so many good ones join the Brigade. But if you look at the Derby, you know, you're looking four or five deep at the top end of it. So Tis the Law, would the race have been tougher in May? I mean, it's hard to say, but it's harder in a way, Brian, because they had to keep Tis the Law in form and come up with a new plan to get to the first Saturday in September. They've done a great job, but the horse has obviously been complimentary towards that, and that isn't always the case, as we've seen on the path this year.
Yeah, for sure, and I think it's exciting, if nothing less, that there is that new dynamic this year. Joe, you in the past 2 or 3 years, you've delved into racetrack ownership and Brilliant Racing. That's enjoyed some success with a limited amount of starters. Give the people a little bit of an idea about Brilliant Racing, what you're trying to do. I know you are at the absolute top of the list when it comes to, you know, racetrack ambassadorship, if that's a word, getting new people into the game, this game we love so much. You have really kind of grabbed the bull by the horns there. What's with Brilliant Racing? How's it been going? And I would think that's the perfect opportunity for folks that want to get involved in racing.
Yeah, we have three partnerships. We just bought 3 2-year-olds at the Ocala 2-year-old in training sale, which obviously got pushed back from April to June. And we're excited about them. But we had a really nice filly by the name of Yes It's Ginger win at Ellis Park in a fast time, breaking her maiden off a 13-month layoff a couple of weeks ago. We think she's good enough to get some black type. We paid $40,000 for her out of the last crop of Yes It's True. Eskenforth, probably our most famous horse for winning the Indiana Derby without a jockey last year. He's kind of become a fan favorite. But, Brian, we've got about 150 members in the three partnerships. You know, members, their family, their friends, they all get excited about it. And for me, doing my job to see how it works from the time you buy the two-year-olds to developing them to figuring out what spots to put them in, it helps me do my job as a racing analyst because I think it gives me a very unique perspective.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of my good friends, Brian and Wayne, Gene Kirshner is involved as well. And like you said, it's friends, family, and all sorts of outside the box people as well. If you can give a shout out, Joe, if they want to get involved. I know you have kind of a manager as well. Where can people go if they want to get involved in Brilliant Racing?
Yeah, Brandon Stauble, who's a private clocker, has got a great eye for horses, and Natalie Gills, who also has a great eye for horses, are our managing partners. It's brilliant horse racing.com. We're thinking about maybe doing some yearling stuff, Keeneland September, which would be short notice, but we think there might be some opportunities there. Otherwise, it'll be the two-year-old in training sale. We'll get the fourth partnership going sometime around December. Start formulating that. But again, you buy in one unit, has been $2,500. You get interest in three different horses. If you buy one horse, you never know when that horse might not be able to make the races or gets hurt. This way you've got interest in three horses, which means you're probably going to be running one, two, or maybe all three of them at any given time. And like I said, it's a family atmosphere. We do a great job with the communication, and we try to make it fun and affordable for everybody, and most importantly, transparent, because when you're owning horses, I think that's the most important aspect.
Yeah, and the partnership has really become in vogue in the last, I'd say 10, 15 years. And I had Tommy Bellhouse, one of my favorite people, you know, West Point thoroughbreds, and they certainly play at the high level. But as you mentioned, the beauty of the partnership does means you don't have to spend $80,000 or what have you on a horse. You can get involved, three horses, a lot of bang for your buck. And I know you can speak of this, Joe, as it's happened to you. They're seeing your horse win, there's no better feeling, and it's the beauty of this game.
I mean, look what Jeff Bloom did with Midnight Bisou, right? What did they pay for her? $80,000. You know, you see this all the time. Swiss Skydiver, $37,000. I mean, you can get horses that are good for a reasonable amount of money, and we think we've done a good job picking up our horses. We've had some success. We think we're set up for a good rest of the 2020 season. And for me, going back to the barn and getting to know the horses intimately, seeing them come into the paddock, watching them compete, and then, like you said, there's no feeling like watching them win. Until you do it, you really don't know what it's like. And to me, it's special. I think it adds a lot to your day-to-day existence if you love horse racing, particularly if you love all aspects of it, the horse, the race, you know, maybe playing the races a little bit as well. I think to get involved at a low level and get a taste of it is something that everybody should try to do if they have that opportunity with people that they trust.
Great to hear. Continued success. Joe Christofek, the paddock analyst at Churchill Downs. Derby's coming up front and center, and gave us some thoughts today as well on a few Churchill runners. They'll be throughout the meet. Not as many as in years past. But, Joe, I want to give you a special thanks for stopping by. Best of luck going forward with the Derby, and certainly brilliant racing.
Yeah, Brian, great job as always, and always good to catch up. And best of luck to everybody out there. Should be a fantastic day, star-studded day. Get to see some tremendous performances and hopefully cash a few tickets too.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe. Christofek is going to wrap it up today on Saturdays at the Spa. As I mentioned, you know, every week, thanks so much for the people that have stopped by and take the time out on a Saturday morning. Al Stahl, third year in a row, Al sat next to me, and we wish him all the best. One of the, Anthony Mormino said this, he's known him said for 25 years, one of the best guys you're ever going to meet. In racing, class, nice, and so we appreciate him stopping by. Jeff Bloom as well, co-owner of Midnight Bisou up here in Saratoga. She's going to be a heavy favorite in the personal ensign as well. And then Joe Christofek, as I mentioned, paddock analyst at Churchill Downs, Mr. Kentucky Derby, which is a thing this year. So we're going to talk about that a lot going forward. I'm going to have Jeremy Plonk, a horse player now, on the show in a couple weeks. He does Countdown to the Crown because the Derby is something that we're all looking forward to in this weird and wacky world, and certainly the Travers next week with Tis the Law and the Sacatoga Boys looking to the only horse that can win a Triple Crown this year, embark down that path and add the Travers to an already burgeoning resume, and that started with the Belmont Stakes. So a lot to look forward to here at Saratoga. Whitney Day today, a monster card with all the stakes, all the grade one races, the champions or champions in the making that are here. I know you can't get here to the track. It doesn't mean you can't come up to Saratoga. It doesn't mean you can go to all the OTB branches. Fire up the account, capitalotbbets.com. Enjoy a great day at Saratoga. Take care.
You've been watching Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Nadeau. Saturdays at the Spa has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site, CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.